Hello there. I'm Sydney Lee. I'm a staff technologist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And that means I primarily do work on our open source projects and technology initiatives, such as this one. I also happen to write and review sassy blog posts about the sad state of the internet, and talk to our lawyers and policy activists sometimes about emerging technologies. It's a cool job, yeah. Anyway, so that's not really what I'm here to talk to you about today. I'm here to talk about securing the delivery of email, because it's 2018, and I'm going to talk about how TLS for SMTP is horribly broken, and I'm going to talk about what we can do about it. It's going to be a pretty long ride. It's been a while, so thank you for joining me today, because you're in it with me now. You can't leave. Cool, so you may have heard of EFF's initiative to encrypt the web. This phrase is plastered everywhere. It's all over our website. It's, you know, it's in our blog posts. We say it all the time. It's like the subheader for all of our other like web PKA projects, like Let's Encrypt or Certbot. And I'm going to be kind of nitpicky here. I'm not a huge fan of this phrase. I'm going to nitpick it, because I don't think we should just encrypt the web. We have to encrypt the entire internet. And whenever we use the word web, but then we actually mean, whenever we use the word web, but we actually mean the entire internet, and we forget about all of the TCP packets that are used to deliver application layer protocols that are not HTTP. And I'm a strong believer in leaving no TCP packet behind. UDP, UDP gets left behind even if you try, so. So I'm going to talk about TLS for email in particular, whose TCP packets have been particularly left behind. And not necessarily overlooked, they've been looked at a lot, but just left behind for several difficult technical, political, and social reasons. So you've heard the phrase, email is so broken, let's just stop using it. It's incredibly popular to hate on email. And it's easy to do this because it's really complicated. The ecosystem is decentralized. It's hard to deal with. But I'm a staunch believer in email. Email isn't that bad, and there's no way I'm going to use Slack for all of my communications. So even though the ecosystem has centralized significantly over the past few decades, it's still one of the first federated, truly decentralized internet protocols that is interoperable. Slack hasn't solved inter-organization communication, and it's like a centralized service. Gatekeeping is what centralized services do, and that's why they want to get everyone in the world onto their platform for money. So email is still hugely important, but it's sad, and it kind of makes me sad that it's so difficult to get right. So let's talk about securing email. Hopefully that was motivated enough. What would that even look like? Because when I hear the phrase secure email, I think of a mythical creature. It doesn't really seem to exist. It seems to be like this vague, you know, idea people have. But it's hard to define, so let's do that first. Let's set some ground rules and refresh our minds for those of you who may not have the joy of regularly managing an email server. This is pretty much what email delivery looks like, but with a lot more steps. Bob submits mail to his mail server. The mail server performs some obscure ritual, and the email is magically delivered to the receiving mail server. And that mail is then delivered to my mailbox by my mail server. With that in mind, the two models of a secure email that currently exist are, first, we should secure each hop individually using TLS. Having only TLS is not great because, you know, as you saw in that diagram and as you probably know, email goes through several hops. TLS only encrypts a communication over a single hop. So that means all of the mail servers along the way have your email in plain text. If you use a corporate mail provider, which a massive majority of the world does, then your mail provider could be subpoenaed or compromised and, you know, put at risk the contents of the details of your life. Using end-to-end encrypted email, like PGP or S/MIME, it can fix that to an extent. In particular, they leak metadata. Subject lines are readable by default in both PGP and S/MIME. Like, I believe they're readable in ProtonMail, which is crazy. And the from and to fields are also readable. And that last one, although there are workarounds around the encrypting the subject line, that last one is something that if we wanted to change it, we would have to rewrite SMTP. So using PGP without TLS, it gives network eavesdropping dragnets massive amounts of communication metadata. And unless end-to-end encryption, you know, becomes the default, this also kind of signals to these network eavesdroppers who exactly is listening or is interested in these technologies. So in an ideal world, we do want both. We want TLS to secure our metadata from passive network attackers, and a PGP to secure our email contents from, say, a Gmail or prying eyes within Gmail's network. So in this talk, we're just going to focus on TLS, PGP, and the entire end-to-end encrypted email ecosystem has its own challenges and problems with regard to adoption and usability. Daniel Kahn Gilmore gave a great talk this morning about AutoCrypt, which is a project to make end-to-end encryption universal, and I highly recommend checking out that project. Okay, back to TLS for email. To be a little bit pedantic, we're going to focus on hop 2 here. It's the most problematic for many reasons, and this will become imminently more clear if you're not familiar with email. The other two, where Bob submits email and email is delivered to my mailbox, are relatively easier since the email user typically has some sort of trusted relationship with the email provider. So you have leverage there. You can just ask your email provider to only support TLS. Like, hey, I'm going to send and receive mail over a TLS connection only on these ports. Users have a way to know whether their mail server supports TLS there. And this is not the case for the hop between two mail servers. So this is a start TLS. ProtonMail asks nicely, right? Both mail servers have to discover that the other supports TLS. If EFF responds positively, ProtonMail sends the start TLS verb to initiate a TLS connection. So let's just get, start TLS deployed everywhere, right? It's a kangaroo because it's a hopping. Sorry. Anyways, I'm a fan of that animal. Obviously we do want to push for a start TLS adoption so mail servers can encrypt more often. Towards the end of 2013 and beginning of 2014, several organizations and researchers started taking a closer look at basic start TLS adoption numbers, and things look pretty bad, right? This graph is from Google's transparency report, which looks at the percentage of outbound emails, or maybe inbound, delivered via Gmail to Gmail over TLS. Researchers reported similar figures. It looked pretty bad. But today, it looks like 90% of outbound emails from Gmail use TLS, which is great. This is probably a decent measure of how emails are encrypted in the real world, given the unfortunate massive market share that Gmail holds. But obviously, we're not done because this is not a 10-minute presentation. So the TLS ecosystem is broken in two major ways, and they're major enough that if both of these flaws are not fixed together, then TLS for email cannot properly protect against an active adversary. First one, you've probably heard of this one. It's susceptible to trivial downgrade attacks. So the initial negotiation is over plain text, and any network adversary or machine on the route between these two servers can just censor the start TLS advertisement. since it's entirely unencrypted, this kind of tampering is totally game. And because email is email, they automatically and by default just transmit the emails over plaintext. And it happens in the real world. In late 2014, several ISPs across the world were caught explicitly stripping the StarTL Esper, or the StarTL banner, from SMTP connections. And also, the interesting thing is there's several ways of stripping StarTLS because StarTLS is so brittle, and mail client or mail servers in general are extremely brittle. You could modify the command or remove it entirely, or just like overwrite it with garbage. And all of these are guaranteed to trip up clients to fall back to unencrypted connections. The different techniques for stripping StarTLS actually provide a sort of fingerprint for who is doing it or what device manufacturer is doing it. And in 2014, it was found that like a significant majority of the StarTLS stripping was being done by a particular Cisco firewall device that offered email inspection as a spam prevention service, which is absolutely insane. Yeah, and in 2014, researchers also did a survey of incoming mail that stripped StarTLS commands, but per country, which also yields absolutely absurd results. The attack is so easy to pull off. And these results actually did motivate a significant amount of work on the email ecosystem. And that's why we have good StarTLS numbers. But obviously, that's not enough. And this downgrade attack isn't the only large problem in this ecosystem. The second problem, suppose downgrades were just solved by some miracle or force of sheer will, or like maybe both, and then some. Let's say there's only two mail servers that exist, trivially, and they both know the other supports TLS. The problem is that nobody validates certificates. So they're still vulnerable to SSL strip like man-in-the-middles. And to be honest, it's hard to blame mail servers for this. We're going to take a closer look at SMTP, again, as a refresher for those who may not be familiar with how it works. In SMTP, which is the mail delivery protocol, there's this extra step which involves a DNS lookup. Email senders are expected to ask DNS for the hostname of the server that they're supposed to connect to talk about email. And after this first lookup, like mx.efs.org, the mail server proceeds to connect to that hostname. So here, there's actually, and assuming that they start TLS, there's actually two names that this certificate mx.efs.org can provide a validation for. There's mx.eff.org and then eff.org itself. And the problem is that both are kind of troublesome. For instance, using the server hostname using the server hostname on the certificate leaves you susceptible to DNS forgery in the absence of DNS authentication. So here, this evil face has successfully spoofed a DNS record. Or like man in the middle of the DNS connection and provides a bad hostname, for which like this guy can totally just provide a valid certificate for this bad hostname. So obtaining a certificate for the original email domain, eff.org, is actually kind of safer. There's a problem with this too, which is that people in the real world use hosting providers. And even if I trust Google to host my email, do you really trust them with your private key to publish for your domain? As a result, the ecosystem is really, really stuck. Like, we would like to validate certificates, but there's all these things, and it's hard to blame them. So nobody validates certificates, and email is vulnerable to man-in-the-middles. I decided to add this laugh kind of half point, very last minute, because I think it's a core cause of why the email ecosystem is so difficult to upgrade unlike on the web, where a TLS or encryption or maybe availability errors all can be forwarded to the user, in email you can't really do that. Users just kind of send off their email to the mail server and just hope for the best. Like maybe they'll get another email back that says, hey, your delivery failed. But there's no way to kind of offload these really important security choices to the user, which is what the web ecosystem does. You click through that maze of error messages if you want to prioritize connecting to the website over the security of that connection. So in 2018, or as of 2018, users don't have a good way to tell their mail servers whether they want to prioritize deliverability over security. And so as a result, failures or deliverability failures in email are much higher risk. And you know, deliverability is just prioritized over security wherever possible. So yeah, there are all these problems. And of course, you know, of course people are trying to fix it. People have been trying to fix these problems for a really long time, but why aren't they fixed yet? What are people trying? And I really like this XKCD comic, because it's kind of like the state in evil. There's a lot of different solutions, or just a couple, but each one has different threat models that solve slightly different problems, and each have slightly different ecosystem assumptions. And that just is the state of the ecosystem right now, although I hope it will converge soon, maybe, as if people start arguing. But that doesn't happen on the internet, so. yeah, exactly. So let's take a look at the things we want when we're looking at these standards. So these two problems, right? Can we determine whether the recipient supports TLS? Or, you know, how do we validate the certificate of the recipient? And the other really, really important considerations that I think right now we have to really, really think about are how easy is it to deploy, and what is the risk of breaking things? Are you guys familiar with DNSSEC? All right, yeah, I saw there was like a half-hearted grumble. DNSSEC is a protocol for DNS to publish authenticated records. You know, for the DNS records for any given domain name, DNSSEC is basically a way to publish signatures for these sets of records, along with, of course, the key that is used to sign that record. So the reg key generates that check mark up there. That's the signature. Anyways, the authenticity of each domain to key binding is then vouched for by the domain's parent zone with yet another signature. And it doesn't go all the way, it's not turtles all the way down. It stops at the DNS root zone with their root key, which is signed by one of the DNS root authorities, where they perform like these public key signing ceremonies that probably involves some amount of occult worship and animal sacrifice. I've never participated in one, so I don't know. It's basically an alternate way to establish a chain of trust, right? Similar to how CAs work, except instead of there being a bajillion unaccountable CAs, their trust is bootstrapped onto the domain registrar hierarchy, since we already kind of trust them to issue names anyway. Anyways, you may have also heard of DANE, D-A-N-E. It's a protocol for domain owners to basically publish and sign their TLS public keys, so when they make a TLS connection, the other party can validate that key over DNSSEC. As a mail server, we could use DANE to publish the TLS key that a client should expect when making a connection to us. And since a DNSSEC also provides a protocol to, approve the non-existence of records, which is kind of complicated and I won't get into here, the presence of a DANE record indicates support for TLS. The problem here is that DANE deployment is entirely dependent on a DNSSEC adoption. So this is a graph from like 2014, 2016 of the percentage of DNS clients that exclusively deploy or like validate DNSSEC correctly. It seems that a high number of these actually, or a higher number of clients actually do request DNSSEC credentials, but a much lower percentage actually validate them. It's been hovering between like 10 and 15% for the past 5 years. And it's actually gone down since then. And for various reasons, you know, DNSSEC has had a lot of trouble getting deployed over the years. It's very political, it seems. First of all, it's a really old proposal, and the initial drafts didn't have as strong security over the years. And similarly, unlike TLS, where you kind of just have to get your certificate signed by a public CA that pops up randomly, for DNSSEC, it's a top-down adoption, right? You can only sign, or you can only publish DNSSEC records if your zone parent or parent zone has done so already. And again, also, like, the momentum behind DNSSEC has stagnated somewhat since browsers decided to focus on providing authenticated encryption for the web over the CA authenticated ecosystem. And, you know, for people who trust the CA hierarchy and DNSSEC hierarchy equally, that's a different argument that I don't really want to get into. Email security is really the golden use case for DANE. It's been around for a long time, and we didn't have a different way to secure it for that period of time. So in the face of low adoption rates, some folks over at IETF have been finishing up a new protocol. MTA-STS is the name of it. If you've heard of HSTS for the web, it tries to do a similar thing for mail servers, but with more steps. It's more complicated. The way MTA-STS works is that the mail server hosts this HTTPS file that describes their TLS policy, so it has in it the host names that you should validate the certificate against. And it also has this expiry time, similar to HSTS, where publishing a policy is publishing a commitment to retain that policy for a certain amount of time. Unlike HSTS, however, this protocol relies on DNS to discover the policy in the first place for various reasons. And this is very complex, right? It suddenly brings in all of these other protocols, primarily HTTPS. And the reason for this is that the primary driving force behind this draft is that incremental adoption should be easy and not necessarily depend directly on DNSSEC in order to realize the security gains. And this provides that, right? Like, hosting a file over port 443 is relatively easy now, or has become easier over the years. And hosting a TXT, you're already hosting MX records. Both of these, or this builds off of existing protocols that work really well. You don't need to define like an extension to SMTP to deploy it. But of course, it's still, you got tofu there, right? Because that DNSSEC connection is not encrypted that DNS connection is not encrypted absent DNSSEC. And so to fix that, we're doing a really simple and hacky thing to remove the tofus. We're starting to host basically just a static policy list file. It's literally just a giant JSON blob that we expect people to cache aggressively, but still check for updates regularly. So you can submit and pull policy information of all the mail servers who opt in to this list. And if you're familiar with the web, browsers everywhere still ship lists, giant lists of websites that support support HTTPS, and these are called HSTS preload lists. It's also a similar hacky thing. The idea is pretty much the same, but since the client ecosystem on email is much more decentralized, like we don't have just three MTAs like we do with browsers, than the web, there's some extra work on our part. We have the right tooling that works well for generating usable MTA configuration files from this list. All right, so as you can see, each of these projects do different things, and none of them really directly supersedes or supplants the others, and they all have different trade-offs and different trust and threat models. So the last point, I just wanted to reiterate, what about deliverability? What is being done to mitigate deliverability issues? And I think this is a point that none of these have really gotten right. Dane is essentially pinning public keys, and we all know how well that went for the web with HPKP. MTA STS is like HSTS, but even more brittle because it includes information about how to validate the certificate, like what hostnames to validate against. HSTS on the web broke things all the time still also. And both of these are made more dramatic by the fact that migrating hosting providers is something that people do. And it changes your policy. Though it happens infrequently, we don't necessarily want people to be locked in, to a single mail provider while they wait for like something to expire. So what we need for all of these are integrations with existing monitoring tools, like a way to report failures to email administrators. And so one draft that I'm a huge fan of is TLS RPT, which is being developed in parallel with MTA STS. It's trying to do exactly this. It specifies a format for aggregating reports of TLS failures. It's not a particularly sexy RFC. It's dead simple, but something like this is sorely needed in the ecosystem, and I'm really excited to see it happen. Yeah, so what can we all do to dig ourselves out of this hole? I'm going to, we should all keep following MTA STS and a TLS RPT, TLS report in particular, since if people are too scared to break things, if that barrier is too high, then nobody is going to upgrade their mail servers. And a significant amount of development work is needed. There's lots of different MTA software out there, and both of these IETF drafts are in last call. So we're going to need to start implementing things soon. And of course, deploy and test these out on your own mail server. With a TLS report in particular, you can do this without necessarily breaking things and just kind of test it out and see if you get any reports without having the other party necessarily strictly enforce these policies. And then once you're confident that nothing is severely broken, you can flip a switch and actually have the other parties start enforcing these policies. And as for the policy file that we're hosting, queue your domain for addition. Some of my colleagues have worked on this awesome site that you can use the queue your domain to be added to this list. Unfortunately, I've got a massive backlog, actually, of mail domains to work through since so many people signed up when we released the website. The policy file release and validation process is still largely manual, and I'm working to automate that right now and get through that queue. And we need your help too. As I mentioned earlier, unlike the web, where there's three web browsers, the email world is happily littered with this beautiful diversity of mail server software. We need easy ways to generate configuration files for these MTAs. And maybe once we've got some traction in this area, we can start lobbying for a native MTA support. And of course, test out the code on your own servers, report bugs. Yeah, happy hacking, I guess. That's all I got, so.
You got 20 minutes if you want to do Q&A or whatever.
Yeah, do you guys have questions?
Thanks for your talk.
Yeah.
Have you heard of significantly more hacky OnionMX by chance?
Oh, what is it called?
OnionMX.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's also a really cool project.
What are your thoughts on it?
I haven't looked too much into it, but it's definitely something that we've wanted to take a look at and make sure that the policy list can integrate with it potentially in some way. But yeah. Yeah, thanks for the shout out.
Thanks. Hi. All these solutions sound great, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like this is really focused on like the validation and ensuring that we have good deliverability for the first hop. But like, suppose that first hop goes great. What happens if like after that there is another hop that like we can't ensure security of? Because like, I guess technically like we could potentially, without all these extra specs, ensure that we have like good TLS by, for example, like if I was on my own mail server, I could set like, you know, validation of TLS strongly, and I can also like set secured if I don't care about like requiring TLS, if I don't care about deliverability. How do we solve that problem?
So the deliverability concern actually spans the entire, like, I guess it's not end to end, but it's from mail server to mail server.
Yes.
And doesn't necessarily only apply to the initial DNS lookup for like MTA STS. So a TLS report aggregates all sorts of different errors, including, you know, DNS misconfigurations, like your TLS versions are out of date somehow, mm-hmm. or even your host names are somehow wrong, and I couldn't connect to any of them.
Cool. So potentially, if there were many hops, like that could sort of like, if there was some issue at some point with TLS, that could like taint the email and send that report back to me saying that there was a deliverability transport problem.
Yeah. So the idea is, in order to achieve some sort of incremental rollout, we can have like a testing mode for our policy, for instance. So like, I'm in testing mode, people are trying to connect to me, and if they end up falling back to plain text, send a report over this other channel that may be unencrypted, but it doesn't really matter that much because it's more about getting all of the testing worked out.
Okay. Yeah. What if that was like a malicious actor, for example, so they wouldn't be sending me this report?
Right, so that's not the threat model necessarily. Like,
okay.
Obviously, like, if it's unsecured, you could get a bunch of bogus reports, but then you can go check your configuration file and say, like, oh, yeah, that's not actually a problem. So the model for that is just, let's make sure everything works correctly, and then, you know, let's start securing that connection.
Great. Thank you so much, and
yeah.
Awesome talk.
Yeah, thanks.
Hi. Two users. One, single individual, you know, your grandparent, whomever, who wants an email address somewhere. Second user, an organization such as, for example, the University of North Carolina, you know, maybe many users, own domain name, doesn't want to spend the time or resources managing its own email server. Both want somebody else to take care of all this for them.
Mm-hmm.
Who should they contract with?
Another, I guess, tenet of like start TLS everywhere, whatever, you know, that a nebulous name means now. One of the original goals of the project was to make it easier for people to run their own mail servers. This may seem like an impossible task, but I think with the existing tooling, we can potentially make it happen. I don't necessarily want to recommend a hosting provider, but I will say that the projects like Mail in a Box, which make it really easy to run your own mail server, make me slightly optimistic about that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So kind of along that line, there's Mail in a Box. We're all very happy with our little homegrown mail servers. And if you've ever run your own mail server, it's a terrible idea. Don't do it. But what if we had Yahoo, Microsoft, and Google, which already are supporting Start TLS? Like, what percentage of email is that? Like, are we, with them doing it, you showed like 90% numbers for incoming for Google. Is that,
honestly,
is that enough?
Yeah, so for TLS, right? For TLS, if we can get all of those, if we can get all of these protections against downgrades and other active attacks in place, and we get like the three top players, email hosting providers to do it, we're good on TLS. But we still need end-to-end encrypted email. I gave a shout out to AutoCrypt earlier. I really think that's a project that's really thinking about how we can deploy end-to-end encrypted email for everybody.
Thank you.
So we all know Star TLS starts out with a plain text connection, and that's kind of its Achilles heel. But what about connecting via SSL wrapped SMTP? I think there's even a port reserved for that.
Yeah, so we gave some thought about this actually when we were starting out the project. I think, so this goes down to the ease of deployment bullet point. I think it would be much easier now if, you know, in the 80s, we decided to allocate a port for like SSL wrapped SMTP. But unfortunately, that's not what's happening right now. And getting all of the mail servers to switch to this TLS or this dedicated port for SMTPS or whatever, rather than using Start TLS, is a really difficult to do, and will take a really long time. And we still won't have solved the signaling problem of, oh, do I know that person supports TLS or not? This is like for HTTP and HTTPS, we still have HSTS preload lists to solve this initial TLS discovery issue.
You would have to do the same thing with preload lists.
Right, we would have to do the same thing.
Out of channel.
Yeah, and that's what we're working on right now to get a secure email deployed as soon as possible.
Hi, okay. I understand the problems you described with DNSSEC, but there are countries like Germany where standards exist for secure email which promote DNSSEC. And so my question is, are there any fundamental technical reasons not to support both, like MTA, STS, and DNSSEC, and why is EFF.org not using DNSSEC at all?
For the EFF.org not using DNSSEC at all, I can't speak to that. I do represent the organization, but not, you know,
but
everybody
you don't
at the
know
organization.
That there's a specific decision not to do it intentionally, it's just not there, or is there a technical reason why you wouldn't want to do it like you support the DNS system? Or
the technical reason is the trust model, right? So a lot of people. A lot of people choose not to trust, you know, SCAs, especially because, you know, that ecosystem is centralizing, you know, due to Let's Encrypt. And some people don't like the idea of DNSSEC. I think we can get both MTA, STS, and DNSSEC deployed, and I think that's a reasonable solution. The project that I'm proposing right now and that I'm working on actively is to secure email as we get DNSSEC further deployed.
Okay, so but you don't see any problem, you don't lose anything if you deploy both, EFF doesn't just do it currently.
Okay,
so basically the idea would to do...
That's not something I knew, so...
So you could tell people do both, right?
Yeah.
Deploy both, and then you have compatibility with whoever uses one of them.
Yeah, it's easier to tell people to use the latter. But I agree. I have no problem with DNSSEC.
Okay, thanks.
It's been probably a couple decades since I've been deep into SMTP implementations. If we presume that DNSSEC maybe eventually succeeds in its deployment, it seems like we could specify alternative behaviors for how clients interact with SMTP servers by defining protocols that would use SRV records where you know, you could signal kind of what alternatives, like only connect with SMTP over TLS or something when delivering mail to this domain.
Yeah, I mean, once you solve this kind of, so the root of trust problem is not solved for email, is basically kind of what I'm getting at. And once you've solved that, like you could possibly do a lot of other cool upgrades and cool fancy things with the protocols.
Maybe it sounds like it's just the way you've presented it on your website, but I was looking at the website while you were talking for Start TLS Everywhere, and you know, you've got the list where you're doing your daily checks before you let somebody onto that list. Once they're on the list, though, it sounds like if if the mail server starts to fail to meet the criteria, you would take them off the list. Is that right?
No, we wouldn't take you off the list. We explicitly specify that you should have a contact email where you can receive urgent requests.
Drop it off without.
No, absolutely not. Okay. That's a very dangerous game.
Hi, just wanted to ask if there's much agenda to, I guess, have the enforcement on the mail clients and the mail infrastructure. I guess the precedence there is how the browsers, Microsoft, Apple, Mozilla, Chrome, enforce the cipher protocols that you use and the root stores that you trust.
Yeah, so by mail clients, do you mean MTA server, MTA clients, or do you mean like
combination
Thunderbird?
Of that and the actual email client themselves, because it could be done on both.
The problem with doing it on both is that would require a change to the SMTP protocol. Once you send off your email, it's kind of just gone forever. And the MTAs are the ones who actually perform the protocol. I don't think you could enforce. So there is a draft on the IETF for a required TLS header, I think, which allows the mail clients to put a header that indicates that the user expects this to be delivered over TLS, and if it doesn't do that, just not to send it entirely. So this allows clients to prioritize security over deliverability, but this requires protocol changes, right? And it's a large protocol upgrade. So your mail server and the other mail server have to both support it as well.
Yeah, and I guess with the MTA, just considering the fact don't allow renegotiation of the protocols to begin with, in the same sense that the CA and the CAMB board, certificate authority and browser boards do that already, in the same sense that the MTA is going to do that too, just wondering if that is something that's being pushed as well.
What do you mean by renegotiation?
As in, like, a negotiation of fail down to insecure, just don't accept the connection if both parties don't agree on the same connection?
Yeah, you have to forward that information in that hop diagram. You have to forward all of that information in hop one. And the MTA has to support that. And then when they make the connection, they have to be able to enforce that rule that you've defined.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I may be missing something, but I think the difference between the browser model when you connect to a secure site, the decision to trust that site is laying with within the client.
Yes.
Now, when you send something out by email, then basically you relinquish your trust to some.
Yeah, exactly. You basically delegated your trust to the mail server.
To something, right?
Yeah.
Do you provision anything to kind of control that trust when you send a message like, hey, these are the, hashes of certificate authorities that I recognize, and if I see something else, then I don't want that message to go through.
So now you're kind of getting into end-to-end encryption. Where a client expresses like, hey, these are like my public keys, and I.
No. Let's just say you said that the header in the message may have, hey, these are the hashes of CAs, the root CAs that I recognize, if I message along the way meets some strange certificate authority, I don't want that to be part of the chain.
So like MTA SDS, for instance, like one of the alternatives that was proposed is to have some sort of in-channel policy negotiation. Mm-hmm. And the reason they decided to go with, relying on this out-of-band HTTPS call rather than an in-band negotiation is, again, because of ease of deployment. If you had the policy negotiation, you would need all the mail servers to upgrade at once. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Do you know how big the JSON file is currently, and is there a problem with it getting to be too big?
Yeah, so right now it's very small. As I said before, I have a very large backlog of domains to add. But eventually we'll publish signed diffs for the JSON file, and then you can also verify the result with the offline, like more secure offline signature, if you so wish. Yeah. So